And welcome once again to the Liberty Lounge. However you found us, we're glad that you did. Hey, we met a lot of new folks over the last week, so thank you. If this is your second episode or you're just finding us, thanks for finding us. I am joined right on my left by Jared of Guns and Gadgets. He's waving at you. And out in California, we got Anthony of the Armed Scholar Channel. Y'all are seeing, those of y'all that are watching us, you're seeing Jared point to his newly adorned laptop.
We listen.
We have.
How much did that staccato sticker cost you?
A lot. Yeah.
It's a great staccato sticker. Jared is leveling up his laptop and his stickers. All right. Last week, we talked about this. We talked about that crazy stuff is going on with the ATF. They're not just shooting dogs. They're not just murdering canines in your living room. They're also approving forms quickly, and it's continuing to roll, Jared.
Yeah, I am a one who will continue to test something to see if I just lucked out. So last week we talked about I got an 8-hour suppressor approval, one shift. So I tested again when I picked that can up, and I had to wait a little longer this time. 48 hours.
48-hour approval. We are in the golden age of Form 4 approvals. Saying something positive about the ATF. Anthony, what's the rumor on the street? You heard of a fast one, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it was on the last video. We got a comment from one of the viewers, and shout out to you if you're watching this one too or listening to this one. I think he said 4 hours, which that's insane. I mean, 4 hours approval when, I mean, I know in some of the suppressor cases I've been following against the ATF, like the Texas, made in Texas suppressor lawsuits, the ATF conceded in their eyes, the fastest approvals they would have were 70 days. That was kind of the average, but most people were seeing what, year plus. And I know some people in the comments were also saying, oh, mine's still, you know, a year and whatever months. That could be because it was something you submitted way earlier and maybe it's still sitting in the queue, but it seems like all new applications are definitely in a fast track process.
Yeah, I spoke with somebody who has one can that's been in jail for a year now, over a year. So he still tested the kiosk individual through Silencer Shop, and he got that one approved in about a week. So he still is waiting for one that had been sitting there forever, but the new one he went through, he got it done in a week.
I think while the getting is good, and for the, I mean, it's tough. Things are tough right now. People are trying to buy eggs and groceries, but folks that may have a little bit of discretionary income, if you can, get those forms done, because you know the pendulum's going to swing. They will make things worse for us. The government doesn't make anything better. My last suppressor took a full year to get out of jail. So as soon as I get through the rest of tax season, I'm going to get one at least put into jail. Hopefully, I'll do the 48 hours. All right, suppressors, a lot of rules about those, but also some rules about guns. What's going on with Rashid Tlaib, Jared?
Oh, boy. So, as we know, she's one of the squad. She's not an American-loving member of Congress by any stretch of the means. But she was addressing the floor, I believe it was Monday, and I'll save people the horrible eye-bleeding account of actually watching her. But she spewed a whole bunch of gun control and gun violence lies. The first one was there were 103 mass shootings thus far, which was more days than there were in the year, which is obviously a lie. Also said, yeah, guns are the number one killer for kids, which is obviously a lie. But then she said this, which made me have fun on a video today. She said that guns have more rights than women. Now, guns don't have rights at all. It's just an inanimate piece of metal and plastic. However, I think it would be fun to let's have a back and forth here to figure out how life would be if that were true, if guns had more rights than women. I'll go first. What if we told women that they would be judged solely on their accessories? They had to be standard accessories. They could not be bolt-on, otherwise states could ban those. What about you? Let's have fun with this. I figured I'd start with that one because that's fire.
John, are you going to go? You want me to go? I got one.
I think my first thought was we should have saved this for Mother's Day. How about we just like offend all the mothers out there? The idea that guns have more rights than women, I don't know if that's true. We should probably make women fly inside of our carry-ons on airplanes. You can't get into the cabin. That'd be fun. Anthony, what do you got?
What if we can't take them to any sensitive locations? No restaurants that serve alcohol, no other prohibited places. And what if we have to, for example, in California, New York, New Jersey, and all these other states, What do we have the business affirmatively tell the woman she can come inside?
Yeah, they had to have a sign posted. What about no women in Times Square? Because that would be dangerous. Or
no women in schools.
No women in schools, no women in banks. They couldn't go into government buildings. I mean, we could just keep going because this is the thought that guns have more rights than women is ludicrous.
It is ludicrous, but they actually believe it. I remember years and years, and think whatever you want about Rush, but I remember years ago back in the 90s, Rush talking about that the other side is so much better at pushing the narrative than we'll ever be. Nothing has changed since then, and they are willing to push these things forward, these narratives forward, and everybody just claps along. Oh, yeah, 100 and something mass shootings. Yeah, if they had more rights or the same rights than as guns, you know, you'd be have to hide them in public. You'd have to conceal them in public. Put a burqa over their face and conceal them from.
They would have to have a permit. They would have to have a permit to go out in public.
Yeah. What if I told my wife you couldn't come outside unless you had a universal background check?
What about a waiting period before the woman could, you know, be somewhere?
Well, and the other problem is we would have to go through a background check of 4473 to be able to own one.
Right. And no woman would be able to date or even have play dates until they were 18 or 21, depending on how tall or short they were.
Yeah. My vote on this one is we
no large capacity women.
We've officially derailed.
Cramp.
No. I'm stopping both of you all before we go on. Women, we love you. All three of us come from women. We love you just the way you are. We are glad that you have the rights, and we wish that guns had the same rights that women had. I wish the guns had the same rights that I have. It's a scam by the left, and Rashid Tlaib is a freaking liar. Jared, Colorado, what's going on out there?
So interesting what happened in Colorado. After all of the Supreme Court recent issues with infringing laws when it comes to the Second Amendment, most recent is Bruin, where it said it has to be text, you know, it has to be text history or tradition was they came up with. It had to be consistent with, there you go, perfect shirt. What a segue. You can get those shirts.
TriStar.
You know, in order for a government infringement to remain on the books, it had to be consistent with the text history and tradition of firearm regulation during the time where the Second Amendment was adopted, 1791, and a couple of years after that, but nowhere near what we have now. So Colorado said, you know what? Let's ban assault, quote unquote, assault weapons. Let's ban rifles and pistols with threaded barrels because we think we can. So it's just another state. It's a handful of states that think they can just, you know, turn their nose to anything that the Supreme Court said. But what I want to add is that before we kick to Anthony, because I know he wants to chime in on this, in the Heller decision, in the Caetano decision, they talked about common use. And in Caetano, it was a 9-0 slaying against Massachusetts, which, although that case was for tasers and stun guns, part of the decision in that, they said that there were 200,000 owners of those items. So it was common use. Well, there are tens of millions of rifles and tens of millions of threaded pistols. So it's in common use, obviously.
There's a lot going on with this one. And like Jared said, this is another state directly responding to the Bruin decision. We saw Illinois, Washington, Oregon, a lot of states have responded to Bruin. I mean, and not even directly to the carry stuff, but this is with magazines and rifles. Looking a little bit more in detail with this Colorado one, it's interesting because every time we see an iteration of this bill, it is in some ways a copy and paste of prior statutes or bills or laws that have come before it, but they always learn. So with this Colorado one, like Jared said, they outlaw all semi-automatic rifles that have a threaded barrel. That's pretty much every single AR-15, AKs variants, you know, a lot of semi-automatic variants. And then they also have language in there that talks about if the rifle has just simply a barrel shroud that protects you from directly making contact with the barrel. Well, again, that's almost every single semi-automatic. And then they talk about other configurations that they're outlining. They copy and paste from California's Roberti Roos list, which is the makes and models list. So it's just one of those things that they learn and they evolve every single time. This one, they weren't as bold as some other states to ban all possession of assault weapons. They're going to grandfather in those that are already possessed, and it's going to be a future prospective ban on the sale, purchase, acquisition of rifles. But I always tell everybody, don't be fooled by that, because that's the same thing that California did and other states did. They first target the future sale, and then 3 or 4 years later, what do we always hear? We got to close the loophole. It's all of a sudden, all the crime is these grandfathered rifles. That's the problem. You know, our law before didn't go far enough. It didn't stop all the crime. The crime's still rising. Forget our democratic and state city policies that are leading to that. Let's just blame the grandfathered rifles now. So there's a lot with that. I mean, Jared's referencing, you know, the Heller and the Caetano common use analysis, but a lot of that stuff, we shouldn't even have to get to that. But even that's being contested, because you see, again, stuff in Illinois, the Seventh Circuit is not following those decisions. They're following the military use test, which has been rejected by the Supreme Court, but that's still being touted out there. You had, the Second Circuit also following the military use test out of Maryland. So it's a mess. It's an absolute mess, and it's unfortunate.
Johnny, question for you. How many standing armies in the world are you aware of that would go to battle with or do issue AR-15s?
My understanding, and y'all got to remember, I am a meme lord and I fight in the meme wars, but my understanding is no AR-15 has ever been used in a single armed conflict between armies of a state ever. So the number is zero.
Guess that kills the military use standard.
How'd I do?
Yeah. And even that, when you look at McDonald, they talk about, and some of the things that were outlawed were mainly because they were not useful for military service. So don't even follow that whole narrative in itself is not a correct analysis, because when you look at one of the true intents of the Second Amendment, and the tradition behind it was for individuals to have access to arms that were useful to fight back against tyranny, either foreign or domestic. So that whole calculus of whether it's useful military service or if it's military use, it's not even the proper lens to look at this through.
Here's one. Y'all have heard this phrase, rules for thee, but not for me, or rules for me, but not for thee. Y'all know E. Jean Carroll. If you don't know that name, she is that manly looking woman who came out against Trump, which is absolutely hysterical. It's fun. I love the whole thing. It has been entertaining. I don't know if y'all have heard this, because we, Jared and I spent the whole day yesterday hanging out, and we didn't talk about this one. E. Jean Carroll, if y'all don't remember her, look her up. Prepare your eyes before you click on her face. So she did the lawsuit and gave testimony of defamation against former President Donald J. Trump. Turns out, in New York, during the trial or during her testimony, she had an unlicensed firearm at home. Here's the great part. It came out. Police went over there and they took possession of it for a cop. This is a New York cop. A New York officer said, I'm keeping it in safekeeping for her. So they took it to the station and she was not arrested. Let me ask you this. What if a Republican or a conservative had been found with a firearm in New York? Jared, what would they have done to him?
Oh, they would have made headlines for him. So it would have destroyed their chances at an election. It's Democrats being anti-gunners being anti-gunners, because it is anti-gunners on both sides of the aisle, but this is absolutely ridiculous.
This is straight from, I don't know if you call it law or straight from whatever, that wherever they write words down to make things bad. Quote, under New York state law, a person can be found guilty of criminal possession if they possess a firearm, such as a pistol, that has not been registered. The felony carries a maximum sentence of 4 years. It was unclear why police waited a month to inquire in person about the unregistered gun Carroll said she had. Anthony, how bad is this? No big deal? Or, you know, is the law made to be ooshy-gooshy that you can give it to some or not the others? Or should E. Jean Carroll now be facing federal charges?
Well, just like you said, rules for thee, not for me. I mean, we talked maybe 2 podcasts ago about the person in New York who was raided for unfinished frames and receivers and all that. Under theirs, they come down hard on people that they don't like, but then all of a sudden, if you're on their side, oh, it doesn't matter that you don't have a New York permit. No big deal. We've seen other people have their lives ruined because of not having the proper permits or being in possession of a so-called ghost gun or unregistered firearm. So it's, yeah. And like Jared said, if it was someone on our side, I mean, can you imagine if it was like a congressperson? I mean, they would come after that person. They would say, oh, you got a felony charge, we're going to remove you from office. I mean, there are so many things they would do against someone on our side if that was us.
Again, absolutely. And we know clearly that the smartest man I know, that child sniffing pervert, Joe Biden, said the smartest man that he knows is his son, the modern artist. Hunter had a firearm. He lied on his 4473. To be clear, there shouldn't be a 4473. The things are a scam to begin with. However, I have to fill them out. Y'all have to fill them out. And he lied on his 4473 about drug use. Then he ends up with a firearm and that he has his dead brother's ex-wife throw in a dumpster across the street. Where? At a school. How many arrests were made in that case, Jared?
I'm still waiting for one. Zero. If it were you or I, we'd be in prison and our families would have no dad or husband or whatever. It's horrible. And there is good that is this scenario, because a judge refused to throw this case out last week, which means it's going to be heard. And I know that there were some groups like Firearms Policy Coalitions, for one, they offered their assistance to Hunter's attorneys to try to destroy this 4473 requirement. And I think it would have been great if they took them up. They didn't. But this case, however it works out, is going to set precedent, because if Hunter ultimately is let to walk, which he absolutely will be,
yeah,
then people will be able to point to that and they can use that as judicial notice. Now, will that help? On our side, maybe not, but this is a case that is worth watching.
I say this, that nobody with the last name Biden, nobody with the last name Clinton will ever serve one day. People on our side often will say, oh, we got Hillary now, we got Hunter now. It's not going to happen. They're made out of Teflon. They operate with impunity. They are a corrupt cartel. Start with Haiti and move forward. ClintonBodyCount.com. I don't know if that's really a website, but it should be. They operate with impunity, and the rest of us have to. I don't know. We pay taxes on Monday. We have to follow the rules. We have to. I don't want to say how many, Anthony, how many you've done, how many you've done, Jared. We're not going to say the number, but we do a lot of background checks. We follow these rules, and we have to do them super, super closely.
Background checks for ammo here in this state.
Do you really? I've heard that before. Is that really a thing? Like, you have to like fill out a background check to buy ammo? I think a lot of our audience won't believe that.
Yeah, I have to do background checks to purchase ammo. I cannot have ammo shipped directly to my home. It's got to go through an FFL to an FFL. There's workarounds with that if you have a COE FFL03 in California, but just the average person has to go through background checks and FFL and all that stuff. So pay a fee.
Some friends of mine at pewpewtactical.com, they were talking about shooting in California, and they're like, they said this, tell me if I'm right, Anthony, because I think folks in the quote unquote free states won't believe this, but they said because of that background check, that box of ammo is now tied to that individual, mm-hmm. and I cannot give ammo to Jared. The only thing they said they could do is maybe sit it down between us at the range, and maybe Jared borrows some then while I'm not watching, but you can't just like hand a box of ammo to one of your buddies. The ammo has to stay with you until you fire it. Is that correct?
I would have to look at the nuances. I've never seen that actually applied, and I don't know if there's true statute, like penal code on that. There's a certain language about importing and who can bring it and who can, I think what maybe they're talking to about the tie of the possession of it has more to do, like, if you want to purchase certain ammo, you have to prove that you already have that firearm, that caliber, and you have to have already had that firearm in the CFAR system. So maybe there's some penal language that's tied to, if you're giving ammo to this person and they don't have a registered firearm of that caliber, maybe that's something to that. I would have to look more about. I've never seen that applied. I know guys all the time go to the range, and I've never seen anybody, and I've never even heard of the DOJ ever. I mean, how would they know, too? I mean, there's also always the practical side, and again, not legal advice, but there's always the practical side to how these laws are enforced. Like, how is the Cal DOJ going to know if you go to the range with your buddy and you shoot, he shoots some of your ammo?
Word of the day, boys and girls, is penal.
Penal.
Twice the word.
That's California penal code.
California penal code. Jared, where are you at with all of this ammo and background checks?
I just think it's funny that we're talking about that on today's date, which is a huge anniversary in this country. It's the day back in 1775 where the British Redcoats decided they were going to march to Concord and Lexington to seize the ammunition and black powder and guns from the colonists. It was the shot heard around the world. It started the American Revolution. And here we are talking about the government seizing ammo again. It's amazing that we're so far removed from what led to our freedom, yet we're right back there again.
I love that you brought this up. We talked about this yesterday. Last night was the night that Paul Revere went on that ride. And I know that some of the actual details have gotten lost with the telling and the retelling and the mythology of that. What's maybe one thing of last night's activities all the way down to the shot heard around the world? One takeaway for you, because I know this weighs on your heart. I know it's on you and on, you know, on your mind, because you regularly used to, when you lived up north, go down to Lexington Concord and sit and think and reflect. What's one takeaway on this day, the day of the shot heard around the world? What's one takeaway for all of us?
How fast Americans came to support Americans because they were Americans first. And how people came from all the corners of New England at that time to assist the militias at the Lexington Battle Green and at the Concord North Bridge. And before those Redcoats got back to Boston, they were attacked numerous times on what is now known as the Battle Road, which is a stretch of about a mile and a half from the old North Bridge to the Lexington Battle Green. And then I think it's like 17 miles back into Boston. There were multiple attacks on the Brits from different brigades all around New England to fight for freedom, because they knew that this was something that could no longer be accepted. They could not give in to any more of the tyranny that the crown was pushing on them. And that's one thing we lack now in this country, is that camaraderie, that brotherhood, that sisterhood. We're Americans first. Doesn't matter if you believe in Democrat policies or Republican policies. We're still Americans first. And the divide is crushing this country.
Today's episode is brought to you by blackoutcoffee.com. Got some good news, Jared. Launching this week is a brand new premium instant coffee. We have a box right here. I don't know if we're going to get it. I haven't tried it yet. Have you?
I have. And it's phenomenal for what you're thinking of, like back in the days of Sanka, to what that is. It's ridiculous.
It is premium instant coffee. Hey, good news, 20% off your first order with code Liberty, and use that link, blackoutcoffee.com/liberty. I'm excited about it. I haven't tried it. Big thank you to the folks at blackoutcoffee.com, and thanks for bringing that over. Hope we get to try that later. All right, Anthony, what's going on with the SCOTUS? Lay it on us.
Oh man, this is a doozy. And this is one of those ones that me being a nerd sometimes pays off, and it's a blessing and a curse. So I called Jared when I found this, and I called some other friends in the 2A litigation world. I was just, you know, had some free time. So I decided, you know, let me go perusing through the Supreme Court shadow docket, you know, as one does. See what's in there. Start pulling up some cases, reading some cases. And I find this case, and by now, when this video or this podcast is released, my video on the main channel is going to be out. And for your reference, if you want to read it for yourself, it's called Labrador versus Poe. Now, we're not going to get into the whole nuances of what specifically this case is about, because people may have specific ideas of or certain moral, you know, ties to this. But this is in relation to Idaho passing a statutory law that forbids certain activities about providing care to underage children, to change gender and gender reaffirming care. Idaho wants to put restrictions on that. And so there was a statute that was set to take effect in, I can't remember the specific date, but it was January 1st of 2024, actually. It was supposed to go into effect. The state of Idaho was sued by two parents and two children. The parents and the children wanted this gender affirming care. And they wanted to sue Idaho to stop the enforcement of this law. It was filed in a district court. District court ruled in favor of the parents and the children against the state of Idaho, and they put an injunction on this state law. Now, the nuance with this is the federal district court there put a what is known as a universal preliminary injunction in place, which means that not only did that injunction apply to those two parents and those two children, but it applied to all individuals in the state of Idaho, which means Idaho could not enforce this law against anybody. Idaho didn't like that. They appealed up to the Ninth Circuit. Horrible. Everybody who knows the Ninth Circuit's horrible. Ninth Circuit sided with the two parents and the two children, continued to block this Idaho law, and this eventually made its way up to the Supreme Court on a pretty expedited basis through what's known as the Supreme Court shadow docket through an emergency application. Now, like I said, the nuance behind this or the actual statute being challenged doesn't matter as much. I know there's a lot of people on Twitter who are freaking out because this mainly dealt with like transgender rights and all that. That's for our purposes, doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. If you guys want to go into that on your own, you can.
Yeah, what's more, they'll see, people who are watching will see a lot of parallels to the gun world, right?
Yes, this ties directly into not just all federal 2A lawsuits and how they are going to proceed forward from now on, but also challenges to state laws when either a state puts in place a pro 2A law or even a negative 2A law or a law that it's infringing on our 2A rights. This is the Supreme Court, if you read through this opinion, is telling everyone who files these lawsuits when they will take up emergency applications and when they will not, and what type of preliminary injunctions are proper. Mainly what type of relief they are telling these lower courts to issue and which ones they are not. What the Supreme Court told all these lower court judges, all these district court judges, is no longer is it proper to issue universal statewide or nationwide preliminary injunctions. Now, some alarm bells should be going off in your head, because when it comes to 2A lawsuits, a lot of the times when you see us file these lawsuits and we seek preliminary injunctions, we don't just seek the preliminary injunctions to protect the individuals named in those lawsuits. We don't just go for Jared Giannis and Anthony Miranda. We don't say, hey, we want to block this law just for those two people in the lawsuit. We say, hey, we want to stop this law statewide for everybody in the state. The Supreme Court's saying, hey, we don't necessarily think that that's okay anymore. Even going further, when it comes to lawsuits, for example, when we sue the ATF, a lot of times we want these federal district courts to issue preliminary injunctions that are nationwide and have nationwide implications. Again, alarm bells should be going off in your head when you think about things like the pistol brace and the nationwide vacature of the rule that's in place right now. The Supreme Court said fairly expressly that they don't think that's proper anymore, which should answer a lot of questions, and did answer a lot of questions, of why the Supreme Court shot down the nationwide vacature of the ATF frames and receivers rule. Now, I know this is a lot of information, but we've seen already a lawsuit with the ATF frames and receivers rule make its way up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court issued a 5-4 order striking down the nationwide vacature of that rule and told the lower courts that that was too broad. Now, a lot of people were confused why the Supreme Court did that. They stepped in early when it came to that. And that case is expressly referenced multiple times in this opinion by Justice Gorsuch and Alito and Thomas in their concurrence, and also by Kavanaugh and Barrett in their concurrence. Just saying that they are not in favor of these forms of universal relief anymore. If a court is going to issue an injunction, it needs to be limited to the parties. The silver lining with all this is I think there are plenty of ways around this. And Kavanaugh tried to quell some of those concerns in his concurrence by saying there are going to be caveats to all this. There may be situations where there could still be nationwide or statewide preliminary injunctions. For example, if you have the state of Texas who is suing and is named as a plaintiff, of course, the state of Texas as a plaintiff could get relief for the entire state because they're standing in the place of their residents. You could have organizations like FBC, GOA, SAF who are named plaintiffs and on behalf of their membership want to get relief for their membership. But we haven't always seen lawsuits formulated that way. There are plenty of lawsuits right now. One of the ones that's immediately in my mind is the Brito case. The Brito case is individual plaintiffs who got a nationwide vacature of the rule against the pistol brace rule, and that is covering people nationwide right now. Those types of reliefs are on shaky grounds right now. There was a lot of discussion also in here by Kavanaugh talking about how there might be a different question when it comes to the ATF because the Administrative Procedures Act, which is the APA, that talks about there being a potential for a nationwide vacature. So maybe there are workarounds that. This is all to say the Supreme Court answered a lot of procedural questions through this decision that did not deal directly with the 2A. But this is going to dictate how a lot of these lawsuits move forward in the future, and which are currently being litigated right now. We have, I mean, Jared, how many? We have seven, I think, Illinois cases right now that are up on emergency application.
Yeah, and people in Illinois should be expecting what we just talked about, because it's not going to make anybody happy.
It's not going to make anybody happy, because the Supreme Court's saying if there is a preliminary injunction that applies statewide, maybe we're not going to like that and we're not going to take that. Now, people are probably asking, why did the Supreme Court do this? Why did they do this? Gorsuch says in his concurrence they did this mainly to reduce the number of emergency applications that they are getting, because we have seen a huge influx of emergency applications, especially, I mean, we just said seven Illinois cases alone dealing with the state's assault weapon ban. Have gone up on an emergency application. The Supreme Court just like, hey, we don't want to, this is too much. We don't want any more. We think if we just do limited, we just say everybody issue limited injunctions, it will reduce the number of cases that come to us. They did say that, in some ways, I kind of liked what Kavanaugh said, because he was trying to carve out some things. And he was trying to say, of course, there are certain situations where it's going to be very important for the Supreme Court to step in when there's a very high likelihood of success on the merits, you know, for certain groups to win when it comes to the Constitution. We have to take those up. And then he also threw in, which should be good for the pro-2A side, he said, maybe we should use more tools than just our emergency docket. Maybe we should be granting more writ of certs before judgment instead of letting these things play out on the preliminary injunction stage. Maybe we should just say, no, we're going to not let the lower courts sit on these cases and do the wrong thing for years and years on end. We're just going to grant writ of cert before judgment, build out the record, really analyze the merits, and then do something. So there's some workarounds in here, but it is concerning and positive. I've already talked to some 2A organizations and their attorneys. They're already filing some supplemental authority using this to challenge, because you also have to think about, there are plenty of states that put in place pro-2A laws, and then the government goes and sues those states, and then maybe that government gets a preliminary injunction stopping that entire state law. This case right here is saying that's not proper. So I think there's, like, you know, the 21-year-old possession of firearms stuff that has happened in, where you had states passing state laws that are restricting or trying to carve out the federal laws and make it more pro-2A for the state. And then you have the federal government suing them and getting blocks on that in the entire state. This is saying, hey, that's probably not proper. So it's one of those things that's good and bad, but we're going to have to wait and see how this plays out and how it's utilized. And it's, I think it's going to be utilized against us, and it's going to be utilized for us in some scenarios. So it's interesting.
My favorite part about that is the really, really nice language that you opened with, which was gender affirming care. We could just call it what it is, sterilization of minors and genital mutilation, because the left, once again, pushing that narrative. I think Jared's point is pretty important, that it's not just about those very tough issues, but also those have parallels directly for constitutional loving folks. All right, Jared, question for you. How often do we eat our own? Here's an opinion piece coming from Fox News. It came out this week. It's entitled, quote, Marjorie Taylor Greene is an idiot. She is trying to wreck the GOP. Close quote. I want to give you the first paragraph of this concerning Marjorie Taylor Greene. Online, they call her the Neanderthal Barbie. Quote, it's high time someone in the Republican Party told Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene to turn all that bombastic, self-serving showmanship and drama queen energy on Democrats and stop trying to defeat her own party. Close quote. She is threatening Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson. I don't see the parallels with the DNC party. I don't see them over the years coming after Nancy Pelosi or threatening her. Is Marjorie Taylor Greene an idiot?
Well, I don't know her personally, so I can't comment on that. But
it's a great title, though.
It is. You know, I'll say this. I don't agree with a lot of the things she does and how she does it. But there's a hand. I'm going to call a spade. There's only a handful of people in Congress that are fighting for accountability and trying to put America first. And if we don't do that, guys and gals, this country is over.
She's got a set of balls on her. I remember when she held up pictures, sexually explicit pictures of Hunter Biden during a congressional committee hearing. And then she called her own girl, Representative Lauren Boebert, called her a biatch on the House floor. She got some balls, I'll tell you that.
She does. She does. And you know, I don't agree with everything she does and everything she says. But holding this speaker accountable, or I mean, it's bad that we're looking at the third Speaker of the House
potentially
in under a calendar year. I mean, that's horrible. That says a lot about the Republican Party. But when you take the speaker's job and you say that you're not going to pass a single dollar for Ukraine or anybody else unless there is a significant funding bill to secure our border, and then you go against that, I'm just going to make these individual bills. It's horrible what's happening to America. If our country can afford to send an additional $100 billion overseas, perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, that means we're taxed too high. And I don't know about you, all that money can stay right here in this damn country and tax us less.
How about stay in our pockets? Yeah, I think exactly. I think we're in taxed pockets just enough. Anthony, how's taxes going for you out west?
He just turned into the press secretary.
I guess I'm a French in taxes. It's bad out there. Yeah, if we can send that mess overseas, God, we can certainly keep it in our pocket. Jared, we were talking before we pressed record on this episode about Rhino saying one thing and then doing another, or at least saying another thing. This is hysterical. Drop it on us.
All right. So real quick, when the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act was pushing its way through the Senate, there were a couple people, Republicans, that were absolutely integral to getting this passed. They went behind scenes, had secret meetings to get other Republicans to sell out the Constitution. Tom Tillis and John Cornyn, to name two, as well as Mitch McConnell, be a third. So now that was passed. Biden signed it. It's now called the most impressive piece of gun control legislation passed in over 30 years. That led to what we just got dropped on us this past week with the ATF, the engage in the business rule. Well, people started complaining to their Congress members about this new rule. And who do you think came out and said that the ATF's new rule is lawless and unconstitutional?
Who?
The same ass clowns that got this damn law passed. Tom Tillis and John Cornyn. Guys and gals, they think you're stupid and you don't remember. The key is to remember, take their jobs. John Cornyn was already censured by his own Republican Party in Texas. Like, these people are not in it for America. They're not.
I like that I asked Anthony a question a minute ago. He said, we just kept right on rolling. Sorry, Anthony. All right, we've been all over the place today. We're going to jump out to Washington State. Tell me about that mag ban, Jared. And Anthony, I do want to hear what you have to say about this mag ban.
So Washington State passed a magazine ban, standard capacity magazine ban. And I'm sorry, it's a longer story, but they passed this. And then a judge decided to say, you know what, this is unconstitutional. You know, because these things are standard capacity. They're actually in common use, and we don't ban those things because of text history and tradition, the Bruin decision. So the AG in the state said, you know what, we cannot have freedom here. We cannot have the Second Amendment. We need to ask the state Supreme Court to stop this insanity. We want an injunction. Anthony, tell them how fast they got that injunction.
Was it 88 minutes?
88 minutes.
88 minutes.
88 minutes.
What do you think?
It's... It's frustrating, but again, I automatically, and Johnny will know this, the memes. It's the with the rope around your neck and you're looking at the other states like first time. Huh? Coming from someone in California who's been dealing with magazine ban litigation for what the Duncan case alone has been going on for 7, 8, pushing 9 years, something like that. Now it's back up in the Ninth Circuit from the en banc panel who broke all of their rules to take review of this case. And I had to listen to those, as in Jared's words, ass clowns again, just butchered the Second Amendment analysis. I mean, and then they're talking about, hey, maybe we'll just send this back down again for a re-review. I feel for the people in Washington. Take it from someone in California. I know your pain. It doesn't surprise me. We've seen this happen multiple times in other states, including California. When, for example, we were talking about the ammo case and the ammo ban, the Rhodey case. And the first time that was litigated, we had an ammo day, and then most recently again we had an ammo 4 days ish weekend where we were able to purchase ammunition online and get it sent to our houses. happens all the time. Expedited reviews, for whatever reason, you know, may call me a conspiracy theorist, but you know, these courts, especially the liberal courts, love to always protect the government and their constitutional violations, but we never get expedited review or analysis of any of our stuff, you know, when it's directly infringing on our Second Amendment rights. We can never get a court to move fast or step in early. It just never happens. State courts don't surprise me. State courts are hard, and I've talked a lot with other two-way attorneys who actually file these lawsuits. Very rarely will you see state lawsuits, especially in the liberal states, fare well. The only caveat to that in recent memory was the Oregon one, where we had an Oregon lower court judge, Robert Roscio out of Oregon, issue some very favorable decisions stopping their magazine ban and their permit process. And then when it went up on appeal in the state court appeals, the state court appeals also kept that in place temporarily right now as they're reviewing that. So that's the only time we've seen state courts do fairly well. Illinois didn't go well for Illinois with their rifle ban. We're not seeing it go well in Washington. California ones never fare well. It's kind of just how that works. So it's unfortunate.
What if we had that as a list of things, going back to the list of things, gun rights versus women's rights?
Can you just stop? Just let it go. We can't do this. Women, we love you. Moms, we love you. Sisters, daughters, we love you. Don't listen to the man on my left.
You have to transport them certain ways in your vehicle. You have to put them in a lockbox.
People driving the cars right now, they want
more. You have to put them in the lockbox in the back.
Keep those women in the lockbox in the back of your car covered up. That's fantastic. All right. By the time that folks are hearing this and seeing this, if this will already be out there, we'll know a lot more about it. But since we've been recording, a man has self-immolated himself in Manhattan outside the trial of Donald J. Trump. Some dude has self-immolated himself. We know nothing about it yet. This literally just happened. The era that we're in right now is an era where activists are lighting themselves on fire. Leftist activists, morons, we call them. They are gluing their hands, and they lost their hands. Those folks in Germany, they glued, epoxied their hands to the road to fight big oil, and they lost their hands. How crazy is it out there? What is going to come next? They're lighting themselves on fire. They're losing their hands. They're getting run over by trains and automobiles. Jared, have we lost our D-A-M-N minds?
Man, I'm a big fan of the Darwin Awards, buddy. Big fan.
No empathy for the guy that lit himself on fire. None.
No, see, he's the one who did it. How can I feel bad for someone who literally lit himself on fire? He knew waking up that, you know what? Today I'm going to do that. So he made that decision. Sometimes you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Anthony, any at all out of your heart, do you have any empathy for this guy?
No, I'm sorry.
The memes were fantastic. After that last
selection.
Natural selection, Darwin Awards. After that last one that lit himself on fire, military base or military dude, whatever it was. The memes were outstanding, and I couldn't air them. I don't want to share it. It is so horrific. Now, the ones that glue their hands down, I can't get enough of that. The ones that go and they think they're going to destroy the Mona Lisa, they throw Campbell's soup on glass. Like, you're not even hitting the morons. These people are called absolutely morons. Anything else about women being locked in trunks?
No, you said enough.
All right, final question. And it's something I've been thinking about for me. I'm going to ask you guys this. What has been something in your life that has changed as you've gone into this realm of interacting with you people, interacting with folks out there, meeting folks that are, how have you changed? How has this journey changed you all? I'm going to share how it changed me. Years ago, and I've changed, by the way, you don't have to email me. I have changed. I have learned. I have grown in this. But I used to think, okay, you know, you're a felon. You've lost your rights when you get out of jail or you complete your term or you get out of prison. All right, you've lost your rights. Sorry, champ, you can't vote. You're a felon. And you also lost your gun rights. And I had never stopped and thought about it, Jared. And I had this years ago. 8 years ago, 7 years ago, I had viewers hit me and hit me and hit me. Johnny, you may want to rethink that, because A, if they're a menace to the society to the point where they can't be trusted with a gun, why do we unlock them? Number two, have they paid their debt to society, yes or no? And I'm like, well, I guess so. Then let them vote. And that is something that really, like that for me, that was a major shift that I was challenged in by my audience. Anthony, what's something that you've grown in during this YouTube/podcasting journey?
I need a second to think about it, but I kind of wanted to bounce off of what you just said. I've always held that view of, you know, if you're releasing to public and you're, even if you're a felon, if you're a nonviolent felon, you should still have your rights. We've seen that play out in a lot of cases. Go read the Cantor decision from Amy Coney Barrett. I think that's a good representation of how that legally plays out and the thought process, at least on the originalist textualist side, I guess, of how they think about that and the implications for the Second Amendment. I think the larger issue that a lot of people point to with that whole felon's rights is the issue we have is not necessarily with the concept of it. It is more of, we have states like California. In my area, we have a whole prison institution that props up most of the jobs here. And the state of California loves to let criminals on the street who maybe have not properly served their time and are not reformed and have more access to luxuries in prison than they do outside. And these individuals maybe aren't, I mean, they are declassifying level 4 inmates, which is the highest level in the state of California. And you have to be in a maximum security prison here in the state. They're declassing those guys if they've been in prison for 20, 30 years, up to level 3s to level 2 yards. And you have guys who have done some serious, serious crimes, including sexual assault and other things, who are being let onto the streets just because the state of California wants to empty the prisons. And right now there's a whole movement in the state of California to make it, I believe, the Swedish model, where there was a phrase that they were using. It's something like hugs, not something else. So
phrase for the Swedish model was
yeah. So I mean, that's the larger issue I have with someone. I think we need more reform and actually maybe punish people according to their actual crimes. Like people who commit rape, you know, probably should be put to death. And maybe we should actually start using our death penalties instead of letting people sit in prisons for 70 years and get to watch flat screen TVs and play PlayStation 5 and do all that, because they do get to do that in the state of California. Just
no flat screen TVs in the state of California. We should switch back to CRT TVs and cathode ray tubes, and they are going to have to suffer. No flat screens. Yeah, it's a nuanced issue. And I just want to say really clearly, like, I realize it's easy for me to go, okay, they serve their time. And then somebody's going to type in, well, what about somebody who has 17 orders of protection, yada, yada, yada. It's nuanced. We could spend an entire episode on this. You can't just like make one, but it's something that I've worked on, grown on, thought about. Jared, how about you? Things that you've worked on because of your audience.
Well, this goes back to, I grew up kind of rough. You know this, I grew up in and around projects, and I used to, because of things that I had experienced, I used to think that, you know, police were the saviors. I used to, you know, when you see that.
Sometimes they are.
Sometimes they are, but not always. So in doing this journey and talking to people that I got to meet and who were victims of crime, you know, I got to realize, you know what, the individual can respond faster than a cop ever can. And, you know, myself, I was a victim of violent crime. I don't know if you guys even know this. I was in an altercation where I was stabbed with remember the old Rambo survival knife from Rambo? I was stabbed with that, and I had a help to my throat, and the kid had threatened to kill me. And, you know, going through this transition through YouTube, you know, I try to say, well, if somebody else is in that scenario, why can't they protect themselves? You know, why should they have to wait for a cop? Because a cop will never show up in time, ever. I mean, even if they're in the same block, they can't show up in time, because it often takes, you know, split second. So that is something that's changed during this venture on YouTube and the advocacy side, is that I am much more fond of people being their first responder, their own first responder, than anybody else. Because it doesn't matter how well-intended the government policy is or the government employee is, they can never be where you need them to be the second you need them to be.
Women and rights with guns, the parallels are there. This whole episode has been horrific on some level. I've apologized 3 times already, and I'm blaming you, Jared, because the whole time you were sitting there talking about getting stabbed with a Rambo knife, which is pretty doggone. If you're going to get stabbed with a knife, pick me a better knife than that. You can't Name a better knife to get stabbed by. I hope you're doing well. I know you are. I know it's a thing. I get it. However, the whole reason time you're sitting there talking, I'm sitting there thinking, what kind of rights do guns have that women don't have, or vice versa? You've wrecked me for the day. I absolutely love it. I don't know how you all found us, but we're so glad you did. This is the Liberty Lounge, where we talk about faith, freedom, firearms, fun, all sorts of nonsense. Wave it out, fellas, and a big ha-ha to each of y'all. We'll see you next time.